My name is Lawrence, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is a little bit, made me think about a lot of things in the last few days or last 10 days when I was asked to do this, because I've really, I ran a pretty fast life most of the time. My childhood really started with enjoying my mom and dad because I was the oldest child and living in a small house in Tularia. We didn't have very much. I mean, we were basically living on meat, you know, beans and rice and meat. Dad was always in the meat industry and there was always plenty of meat, but mom would find the things that she needed to put with the meat. And the meat, and that was normally vegetables or, you know, and the beans and rice and the things that were inexpensive when we lived on budgets. And we stayed very tight on our budget for a long period of time. And about 9 months after I was born, we moved into another house that was a little bit larger. It was my grandparents' house. But again, we were struggling and it was on a budget and we lived very tight, economically and financially. Dad was a very hard, strong, disciplined type of a dad. I was very fearful of him for a long period of time. There was a struggle for me because he was a big man, I was a small child, and I was full of fear. And I was so fearful that I learned how to lie at a very young age. And then I learned the things about manipulating and doing things like that. And then that first addiction that I really fell into, that I really learned, that I didn't realize it was a heavy addiction until later on in life, was a work addiction. And I learned how to work at 3 and 4 years old. My grandparents would come out, because they were farming on the facility at the ranch, and they would irrigate. And I would get up early in the morning when I would hear them pull in, and I would go irrigate with them. And I'd have a little dog, and we'd go irrigate, and 1 year I remember falling into the ditch. And this was about 5:30 a.m. in the morning, and it was what I would look at today as being humble, but it really wasn't humble because I got a lot of compliments from getting up early in the morning and doing those things, and I grew up with a tremendous amount of low self-esteem. That particular time, he grew cotton, and I picked cotton with a gunny sack and filled a cotton bag. But, you know, those were the things that I learned how to do at a young age. It was through the process of work. And, you know, as I grew a little bit older, I would get involved in other things such as got involved in 4-H at a young age, got involved in Pop Warner football, and got involved and continued to work. One of the things that happened when I was Pop Warner football that was, you know, I always seemed to strive for the compliments, always seemed to strive for the credit, always seemed to strive for the things that I felt I could never receive or never get. And it was always coming, the compliments were always coming from adults. So I had so much low self-esteem as a child that these were the things that I was dealing with. I would learn how to lie and cheat and steal at an extremely young age. I mean, I learned how to do this by going to school. Didn't really want to study. I really didn't want to do any of those kinds of things. So I would cheat off of girlfriend's test, or I'd cheat off of, you know, or I'd find the answers in the teacher's book, or I'd find ways of finding the answers. And I was always pretty successful at finding the answers. Teachers always kind of chose me as you would always be the one that would accomplish things in life the way you wanted to accomplish them or when you wanted to accomplish them and how you wanted to accomplish them because you had the goals to do it. And I did that very, very well. As I grew older and we started painting white fences at 11 years old, you know, in the summertime and started working the packing house business. And about the age of 13 is when alcohol started coming into play, and I had a tremendous amount of fear at that time. I had a tremendous amount of resentments at that time. I still had a lot of hatred at that time, and I started drinking. And what alcohol did for me did not make me feel very, did not taste very good, but it was a feeling that it gave me. As a little guy that I was able to drink alcohol to give me the power and the strength when I weighed 9,500 pounds. And it gave me the power that I can compete against anybody that was a couple hundred pounds or any adult or any situation that I was up against. And what would happen at those times was I would continue to work. And I would continue to work hard to be able to work next to an adult to feel like I needed that compliment or I needed that credit, and it was coming through low, and it was because of low self-esteem. and I did this for long periods of time. And alcohol continued to work through, you know, my younger teenager years. I continued to go to school, and I continued to make grades, in some classes the right way, but in most cases, the wrong way. By cheating on the test, by manipulating and conning teachers into giving me grades, because I would do favors and do things for them. So I learned how to barter system at a very young age, and I learned how to do it at a young age. We grew up in the 4-H and raised animals, and always seemed to get good prices for animals at the fair because Dad continued to prosper and do very well in work and do very well in his profession. But one of the things that I learned how to do at an extremely young age is hard work and started drinking, and he gave me the fear. It removed the fear, the anxieties, and the resentments. And also, didn't have to be responsible if I was drinking. My drinking career, I smashed it pretty hard because alcohol did for me what it's done for some of you in here, I know it's done it for me. It allowed me to stuff my feelings, my emotions, and I did not have to deal with the pain of the insecurities, the anxieties, the resentments, and the frustrations of life. I continue to believe in God on a regularly basis, and I continue to go to church, and I continue to go to the Catholic Church. But I continued as a child to barter with God. I prayed to God, going through school, I wanted to marry this beautiful woman. And the dream of this beautiful woman was the physical appearance and the physical looks. And I prayed about that with God. Believe it or not, God delivered that to me when I was 18 years old. And I was just blown away because what I was praying for, God was delivering, and I couldn't understand why he was delivering these kinds of things. We also spent a lot of time, we were young, going racing. We spent a lot of time racing. We probably went 10 to 12 weekends out of the year, and back then that was quite a few weekends going racing because most people were still on very strong, strict budgets and didn't have the money to do it. I took a lot of pride in the racing career. I took a lot of pride in working in a car, and I took a lot of pride in doing things at the races for Dad because Dad was driving the car at the time. And what it gave me, again, I was working for the compliments, and I was enjoying this work for the compliments because of the low self-esteem that I dealt with. I went to the races for about 6-7 years that way, and we did very, very well. Then at the age of 16, I started driving the car. The comment that was made was this kid had his teeth born in this car the day this car was built because he was a baby and he grew up with this car. And I was extremely dominant. When I became dominant, it gave me the power, an overwhelming power that I never had before. And then what would happen when I was 16 or 17 years old, I'd show up at the races on Saturday, and I wouldn't do very well on Saturday because Friday night I got drunk. Dad knew I got drunk. He says, you got to drive this car. You're going to have to dominate, and you're going to have to win, because I know you can do it. I said, okay. So Saturday night, I was in bed by 8 o'clock, and Sunday morning, I was untouchable. And what it gave me was the strength that I knew that alcohol wasn't working for me. Alcohol was not mixing with racing very well. But when my career came crashing down, and I knew that my career was over with because Dad basically lost his job when the packing house closed. And I did not have the money to continue to fund the sport. And I really didn't have the skills or the know-how or being motivated enough to do sales in order to sell that package to somebody else to continue to go on. So that was a crushing point in my life. And my alcohol really kicked in at that time because I really didn't want to feel the pain of not being able to do that. And I struggled with that throughout the different periods of my life today because it was a sport that I knew I was good at. It was a sport that I knew I grew up in. And it was a sport that I knew that I could have done well at if I could have stayed focused and done the things that I needed to do. But it was one of the sports that I know that alcohol crashed for me. Alcohol crashed that sport. I continued to go to school, and I continued to make grades, and graduated from high school. I don't know how I graduated from high school because in my junior or senior year, I was doing a tremendous amount of time cutting class, and I was gifted with a car, and I was gifted with a large enough car that was 4 or 5 of us get together on a weekend, and we'd go find the canal, and we'd drink beer. And when we drank beer through that time, if we got stopped, the sheriff would dump it out, and he says, okay, no more tonight, go home, and we would disobey that. We would go find the liquor store and buy some more beer. And actually, at that time, going through high school, my beer drinking kind of moved into Smirnoff and Vodka and orange juice, and I really needed to get drunk. And I drove a lot drinking and driving. I was fortunate I never got a drunk driving ticket, and I was fortunate that I got all my friends home safe, and I thank God for that gift today. Because I could have been behind bars today. I could be looking at a felony that I probably would have never got out of. I could have killed somebody, and it could have been a lot worse than my life has ever turned, than I could have ever imagined by drinking. I continued to do that through high school, and I graduated. Then I went into a profession. I went into a profession of doing vending machines and in a cash business. And if any of you guys have an imagination of what you can do with cash when you're in a cash business, I did everything you possibly could do. I would go to bars on a regular basis at 18, 19 years old, and I would buy drinks for what I would call, so-called my friends. And I would act like the big shot. I was a little guy, but I was acting like the big shot. And I would buy the business and do what I had to do when I had to do it. And I think I was taking care of business when I was drinking at those establishments. Not knowing that I was gaining business as fast as I was losing business. And I was drinking enough alcohol to continue to stuff those feelings so I didn't have to deal with the losses or the pain of agony of losing business. Then I went to trade shows, and at trade shows I had played the big shot. I'd buy four or five pieces of equipment I really didn't need, but some salesman would feel extremely well because he sold those pieces of equipment. I had a tremendous amount of low self-esteem. That low self-esteem, salesmen, outsiders took advantage of. I did things that I did to feel better. And when you do things to feel better, when you don't have an inner feeling inside to where you feel good and okay with yourself, you do things to feel better. And that's either drinking or buying or using or whatever it takes to get to fill that void. I did that for about 9 years. I was fortunate to go in business at a very young age. I was fortunate to have great work addiction and work skills and good sales abilities because I sold any account that would ever come into this area, and I normally closed the deals. I had a tremendous amount of problem struggling and hanging on to those accounts because of my alcohol would either get me in trouble one way or another. I would take the gratitude and the compliments and the merits of receiving the account, but I couldn't take care of the account. Spent a tremendous amount of time doing caterings throughout that period of my life and did very well and lived again for the compliments. I lived a tremendous amount of my early years for compliments, and they were the wrong way of getting compliments because I would bust my tail to try to get somebody to say how good a job or how well of a job that was done instead of what I was doing for my welfare. And it was a tremendous amount of pain and agony that I went through. My drinking career continued until my grandfather started aging, and he was my partner at the time, as well as my grandmother. And I was extremely verbally abused to both of them in different ways and different aspects. I got married when I was 23 years old for the first time. I took a hostage for a wife. And I knew at the time that it wasn't a hostage, but it was what I wanted because I could control her and do what I wanted to do, what I wanted to do, and how I wanted to do it. And I continued to do that extremely well. She was 19 years old, and she was living in a Portuguese ethical background. And if you're Portuguese, you don't understand what I'm talking about. The understandable of being in a Portuguese ethical background was Daddy never letting you date, Daddy never letting you go anywhere. So as soon as your dad realized you found a nice Portuguese boy, he would take the reins off a little bit, not knowing that I was as manipulating and as controlling as any white guy could have been. With the control and the power and the strength that I grew up with, I would get what I wanted when I wanted it and how I wanted it. And I had two beautiful daughters with her that I loved very much. And I was able to get sober in an extremely young life. My daughters were 5 years old and Beth was 3 years old. That and today, if you're doing sobriety, is the best gift that you can give to your kids. That's been hard work by my part, but it's been God-given in many different ways. I was able to raise those kids in a very dysfunctional relationship with my wife for the first 4 years. I continued to go to bars, I continued to drink, I continued to have a feeling that I couldn't close my day unless it was dark outside. And if it wasn't dark outside and I was finished with my job, I found a way to go to the bar, and I was cutting, in my own mind, I was mind manipulating myself that I was cutting a deal. And I showed up home on a regular basis drunk. I showed up in a way that I really didn't want to show up, but I didn't know how to do anything about it. At that time, I was still going to church, I was still dealing with God, and I was still making conscious contact with Him on a regular basis. But it was in a way today that I know as manipulating and controlling and getting what I wanted, when I wanted it, and how I wanted it. What I did, one of the things that happened to that relationship went south. As you could probably know, if you continue to drink in a relationship, you continue not to support your wife emotionally, and you're supporting her financially, she will eventually leave. That was a tremendous amount of pain, because I grew up in a family to where we sat around a dinner table every single night, prayed, talked about what went on throughout that day, and we had what we had, what I could look at and call a family. I lost that when I went through that divorce. It was a tremendous amount of pain. At that time, I didn't want to live. At that time, I emotionally was bankrupt. And if you're new around here, you don't know what emotionally bankrupt is, see me after the meeting, I can explain to you how that happens. One of the things that I did that was a tremendous amount of pain through that is I really got into what I call self, and I really became the victim, and I really got into who, what the wrong person I was, and why I did what I did, and how come I did what I did. I took that marriage extremely hard. I took that particular marriage as it was my fault. And I took the responsibility for that marriage as it was my fault. And at that time, I was financially sounded. I was actually 30 years old. I was living in a 2,600 square foot house, which is a fairly newer home. I had two cars. I had two race cars. I had boats. I had jet skis. I had snowmobiles. I had money in the bank. But I was emotionally dead. At that time, I ran into a guy by the name of... Actually, I was buying a truck from Grass at the time. And I just, you know, he came into my office, and he knew I was beat up. He knew I was whipped. He knew I was in pain. So I went ahead and made the deal on the truck. And he says, well, call me because I think you might need to talk to me about something else. I says, he says, you're, looks like you might be dealing with maybe an alcohol issue. I says, okay. So I swallowed out for about 2 weeks, and I called him, and I says, hey, I need to meet you, and I need to talk to you. He says, well, meet me at Denny's, and we'll have a conversation. I met him at Denny's, and the first thing I wanted to know if I was an alcoholic. For an alcoholic to ask somebody that's already surrendered to alcohol if you're an alcoholic or not, and he already knows the pattern of living, and he already knows the pattern of the things that you're doing, he says, I'll give you a test. Most of you know what the 20-question test is around here. I think I answered 16 out of the 20 of them in the right way that I was an alcoholic. Today I would answer actually 19 out of the 20 of them that I was qualified as an alcoholic. I had a tremendous amount of fear. I had a tremendous ego, as you can tell with the story that I've told so far. My ego was so big that I asked him, I says, I need to know where the doctors, the attorneys, the trustees, and all the important people go for meetings. He says, I got the place for you. I says, okay. He says, here's the address, and it's called the club. I says, all right, I'm going to go to the club. That night, I believe Bubba was at the meeting, and I believe Butch was at the meeting, and I believe there was, you know, some other people that are, you know, that I really wasn't focused at that time who was at the meetings and not. I walked in that meeting, and I said, okay. I sit down, and I listen, and they told my story. And I said, well, I either need to surrender that I'm an alcoholic or practice drinking some more. Well, at that time, I've been living in a hotel, and I hadn't been drinking for 40 days. If you're a Catholic, you know what 40 days would pertain to. It pertained to the time that I was done and I was through. And I surrendered either that day or the very next day that I surrendered to power to God. And I surrendered a power greater than myself that I know as of today. I admitted that I was an alcoholic. A few more meetings went by. At the club, I believe Bubba called on me one night to speak, and I had like 5 days, and I says, what am I going to say? And I said that I was an alcoholic, and I kept it very short. I was going to some meetings in Farmersville at the time, and I was going to some meetings in the area at the time. I was on the path of going to 90 meetings in 90 days, as we talk about around here. About the 12th day, I went home, got on my knees, and I asked God to remove the obsession of alcohol from me. And I can tell you that if you're really serious about God removing the obsession of alcohol from you, He will do it. And it took the weight right off my shoulders. And I've never felt anything like that in my life again. And I've never had a pickup drink since then. And that was 3/16/91. God gave me the strength to stay sober 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. I continued to go to meetings. Two and a half years, I put a lot of meetings together. When I look at that as like a financial bank today. I put meetings in the bank, and then when I had to quit going to meetings at times. And a number of you around here remember me not going to meetings at times. And every time I walk back in the room, you look at the ceiling and ask yourself, when is it going to fall in? And I'd come back to the meetings, a few more meetings, and I'd get a little well again, and I'd go back out and try it again. And I wasn't going back out drinking, but I was going back out and trying how my character defects were doing in life without going to meetings. And any of you try to not go into meetings, you'll realize how bad those character defects could really come into play, or I did anyway. One of the things that I've realized is going to meetings, working the 12 steps, working with another person in the program, working with a sponsor, turning my life over to God on a regular basis, on a daily basis, and night and morning and throughout the day, and getting involved in a 24-hour day book is extremely highlights of my sobriety. I've done it 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. I never look beyond this program as being any more than today. That's a secret to me of staying sober. Sobriety has not been great and wonderful. I can share a lot of differences with you in sobriety, what sobriety has done for me. It's kept me sane. It actually hasn't kept me sane, but it's kept me safe. I don't agree that it's kept me sane, but it has kept me safe. Several of the things that I do throughout the day, some of the things that I deal with, is we speak around here as a serenity prayer. There's still a lot of fear that comes into my life today. False evidence appear real. And in that fear, I have to say that serenity prayer. And it might be an ex that I have to walk into. It might be, you know, somebody that I've had a difficult type of relationship with. It might be a business situation. But I will use that serenity prayer in my daily activities on a regular basis. And for me, I know the power that God has and what He's done for me that I've never been able to do for myself. I still struggle with fear and ego. I have a huge ego. I still love doing the nicer things in life. I still do the nicer things in life. I can honestly tell you that different times in my life, because of my ego and the fear that I've had suicide come into my life in the time of sobriety. The suicide that came into my life in sobriety has happened at different times. It's happened early in my sobriety. It's happened when I lost one of my biggest customers, my biggest accountant. And the reason why some of the things like suicide has came into my life is because sometimes I don't realize what God's doing for me that I can't do for myself. And money is becoming the power of my life. But when money becomes the power of an alcoholic's life, and there's many Indians here that can understand this, but there are many of them that I've talked to at different conventions that have gone back out because of what money has done to their life. After they've been sober for a while, we accumulate these things. We accumulate great jobs. We accumulate how to make money, and then we don't go to meetings anymore. And the character defects come back into play. the lying, stealing, cheating never leaves us as long as we're still trying to act upon the better thought on those things in life. They will leave. They have left me when I continue to go to meetings, when I continue to work with the sponsor, when I continue to know that God is in charge, and that I'm not in charge. So at the time that I lost a major big account, I felt depression. At the time that I've lost a business, I felt depression. At the time that I've lost a marriage, I felt depression. Throughout my life, God has got me through each and every one of those things. And at the other side, it's always been greater. So I honestly don't believe today, and if you're struggling with depression, you're struggling with those type of things in your life, I'm a perfect example of a person to talk to. I've walked through most of it, and I've gone through most of it. You don't have to pick up the drink. You don't have to commit suicide. There is a plan, and there is an opportunity for you in this world. And God has that. I mentally have had different episodes of my sobriety where I've been a dry drunk. And a dry drunk is basically not going to meetings, not working with a sponsor, not reading the big book, and not doing the things that how to keep it simple around here. For a real drunk like I was, it's real hard to keep it simple because my mind loves to complicate things. And my committee loves to run. But a couple years ago, I had to go back to some classes and learn the responsibilities of life, the accountability of life, how to do that fourth and fifth step again, how to do the eighth and ninth again, how to do those steps so I could find that serenity in life one more time. I get on my knees in the morning and night on a regular basis. And if you're new around here, I suggest, and if you've been around here for a while, I suggest it, because I've done it for the past 18 and a half years religiously on a regular basis. And I don't miss any time that I've ever gotten on my knees. And I use that 24-hour day book when I get on my knees morning and night. If you don't know what the 24-hour day book is, see me at the end of the meeting and I'll find a way to get you a 24-hour day book. A guy that was very generous in this program gave me my first 24-hour day book. He died shortly after I got sober, and the best thing that I can give back to this program is how effectively and how successfully that book will work in your life if you apply it in your life. I've been selfish and self-centered in sobriety. I've been angry in sobriety, and I've been resentful in sobriety, and I've been hatred in sobriety. But I know that there is a solution if you stay sober. There is no solution if you pick up the drink for any of those given reasons. I have a variety of addictions. We talk about alcohol around here, but I know for me today, I have a variety of addictions. My number one priority of addictions is that I ended up with it a very young child, and I talked about it early on. It's called work. Then I started drinking. And boy, did drinking and gambling go well at one time. Then I started smoking. And then I had to quit smoking. And then I started making money, so that becomes a real high priority in my life. Well, one of the things that I can honestly say, God will remove any of those addictions, and He will return me back to sanity. And He's done that many different times in my life. Today I enjoy the finer things in life. I enjoy buying the Italian clothing when it's available to me and when I can afford to do it. I enjoy snowmobiling in the wintertime, and I enjoy driving a Porsche, and I enjoy boating, and I enjoy motorcycling, and I enjoy car clubs, and I enjoy other people that are working the program of being sober today. And I enjoy being around others that are drinking when I'm at those different events, because I can have as much fun as they can have, and I can feel the gratitude in being sober 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. I've had a heart attack in April. I've had to stop smoking, which I did at that time, through the grace of God. I walk 3 miles a day, and God's given me the strength to be able to walk 3 miles a day, and He's given me another chance on earth. And that's one of the reasons why it's important for me to be up here tonight and to share my experience, strength, and hope, and let any newcomer know that you got a chance if you turn it over to God and give God that opportunity to do with what you always wanted to have in your life. I would not replace my life with anybody on earth on what I do today. I fully enjoy my weekends, and I fully enjoy my time with me and with others and doing the things that I enjoy in life that I've strived so hard for so many years. I've been a victim at times. I've earned two liquor licenses that I owned at one time in sobriety. Because I thought I had the power to drink the way I wanted to drink, and that was where the power was coming from. Boy, did God replace that in a strange way. He's replaced it in his way when I allowed him to do it. So, through the closing of this, you can lose wives, you can lose businesses, you can lose big accounts, you can lose jobs, you can have angry, resentment, hurtful, and a lot of remorse, and you don't have to pick up. I'm a living example of that. And God's given me the strength to turn it over to him and allow him to do with me what I want, what I need to do in my life, as long as I do the five-letter word. And that five-letter word in life that I look at is action. A lot of people, you know, told me when I came into this program, one of the things they stated was, turn it over to God. I said, okay. Second thing they says is, let God do for you what you can't do for yourself. I go, okay. Well, I was pretty sick at the time, so I was listening to those two things real well. But I forgot what somebody might have said that I didn't hear. And somebody said, you need to do the action. And I says, what's that? Read those 12 steps? Or read those 12 things on the wall in the Alano Club? And I says, and they said, yeah. I says, okay. I says, I read them. I said, you do it that same way you do the Ten Commandments. You know, and I'm a Catholic, so I read them. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. Well, that's not what the steps are. The steps are simply, turn it, there's a greater power than you. You have to surrender to alcohol. Once you surrender to alcohol, you can turn your life over to God, and then you get into the third step. It's real important to read in sobriety to do the fourth and fifth. And the fourth and fifth is make a searching and a moral inventory yourself and give that to somebody that is a sponsor or somebody that is a priest or somebody that, you know, you faithfully trust in. And then the shortcomings. Make a list of your shortcomings. Make a list of your character defects. And you turn them over to God on a regular basis. I had to. And then 8 and 9, make a list of the people that you made amends to, that you hurt, or that you stepped on, or that you kicked. And boy, did I have a long list of people that I did that to. And it was hurt, and it was very humbling making amends. But it was very grateful once I made those amends, because I took a tremendous amount of pressure off my shoulders. And I took a tremendous amount of weight off of who I am. It's important to make a personal inventory on a regular basis. I notice long time, people that have long-time sobriety, they end up going back out. They can't figure out why they go back out. A lot of times they don't want to deal with that personal inventory. They don't want to deal with the pain. They don't want to deal with being humble. They don't want to deal with, you know, what they need to deal with on a daily basis. On a daily basis, you need to deal with those steps. You need to deal with a few meetings, and you need to work with another alcoholic on a regular basis if you really want what this the gifts of what this program has to offer. And there's some fine people in these rooms, some real fine people that have long-time sobriety that work this thing on a regular basis that I'm happy to be around. There's some newcomers in these rooms that have really helped me in my sobriety. And it has been very important to my sobriety. And I tell you, I was in a meeting in Fresno the other night, and it was a good meeting, and what was very important, and the highlight of that meeting to me was, it wasn't the speaker. There was a young guy that came up there and picked up a big book. I think he had 24 hours or less than 24 hours. And he said he was an alcoholic and he had tears in his eyes. And I could tell that he was in pain. I could tell that he was hurting. If you're new, and if you've been around this program for a while, you'll realize that's how strong the gift of sobriety is. Because the pain's still out there if you really want it and you want to return back to it. And I choose not to return back to it. I have family members in this program. I have a brother that's been sober, was sober for a long period of time and then went back out. I had to really work with him so he got sober again. He has a child today who's dealing with the pain of the program, the pain of being addicted to chemical drugs. You, as being sober today, I can be a servant to those people. I can be helpful to those people. One of the things that I've learned in sobriety that I can do very well, and that's giving. And I just, you know, I just was just sitting in a, and it's giving of yourself, but if you've been financially gifted, I believe you have to financially give in order to continue to have the strength with God that I have today. And I've talked a lot about God tonight, but I can honestly tell you that if you're really serious about this program, and you got a few years around here, and you're not really close to God yet, I'd probably recommend you try to figure out how to get close to God, because when that 8-12 year mark comes around, if you're really not really close to God, you're really going to get really miserable. And I was sitting in a meeting in Orange County one night, and a guy was talking about being drunk. And he was talking about he's been sober 10 years after, you know, and he said, I really don't believe in God. And I says, can I speak to you after the meeting? And, you know, I spoke to him after the meeting because I said, you know, you really got to get the taste of what God is. And for me, God is a living example of my sobriety today. And I will turn my life over to God on a regular basis, even throughout the day. I feel at times that I have the presence and I can walk with God at any given time. And he's helped me in many different things that I've never thought and believed that he would ever help me in. The pain in sobriety is great. Once you go through the pain in sobriety without picking up the drink, the rewards are so much greater. And I want to thank each and every one of you for giving me the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. And if you have an opportunity to stay sober 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. And that's how you accumulate time around here. I've also heard something said around this program at different times, time don't mean nothing. Well, let me tell you, go get it and then we'll talk. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Some of you long-timers have questions on how I did it through the hard times and when I couldn't do it when I didn't want to do it. You can go snowmobiling with me. I don't go snowboarding, but, you know, I'll take you snowmobiling anytime. Nobody's got any questions? That's a good question, Dave. If you're new around here, I don't recommend it. But you'll realize in your life when you've removed the obsession from alcohol from the back of your mind. I mean, there's a lot of people I see relapse in these programs, and I don't mean to be judging anybody, but normally it's because I've left a little reservation in their mind that they can still drink. And I recommend you do not go to those places. It's when your spiritual fit and the obsession of alcohol has been removed from the back of your mind, and that you can walk into any casino. I operate over 80 jukeboxes in 80 bars in three counties. And I can go in any one of those bars, line up booze for anybody that's in that bar, buy anybody a particular drink, and be grateful that I don't have to drink today. Because one of the things that I do is play the film through my mind. And I play the film through my mind on a regular basis of what alcohol did to me. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've learned in this program. And some of you, if you have any questions about it afterwards, I'd answer them. But if you just actually play that drunk all the way through your mind and where it took you, you probably never pick up another drink. Thank you. Is there a question all the way in the back, Tina? What's that question? Well, that's tough for a long time drunk, but, you know. I learned early on in this program, and it was one of the things that Tammy always said to me. She says, you do a pretty good job of putting principles in front of personalities. And that was before she really started going to a lot of meetings. And I honestly, in that relationship, I held that relationship together for as long as I could by looking at what principles are. And principles are things that we talk about that are facts and not what somebody is running their mouth off that doesn't have any information to support that situation. People, places, and things can be a little bit difficult. But I can honestly tell you that I've been in the situations at different times with different people, places, and things, and I've not done it perfectly. So I had to either make amends or I had to go home and I had to think about it and I had to pray about it. But I can change it today, so tomorrow's another day. Sometimes you have to do that in sobriety. Anybody else? Okay, I just ask that each and every one of you stay sober 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time, because it's what it's given us, the gift of the opportunity to stand sober, and it's given us the power to be as close as we are, as close as we are with one another. And to me, there's no alternative but to be sober. Thank you.